Hello, full-bodied family, and welcome back to the Full Body Crime Podcast. As always, my name's Kayla, and I'm here to bring you your daily dose of true crime and murder and all bad and tragic things in this world. I should advise you, and I should have said on the prior episodes, actually, that this is not for children, and listener discretion is advised. Without further ado, let's get into today's crime. On today's episode, we will be discussing the Gorilla Man, who was one of the first well-known serial killers, and he was actually a serial killer before the term serial killer was even created. The Gorilla Man was also known as Earl Nelson, and throughout his string of crimes, he additionally developed the title of the Gorilla Killer and the Dark Strangler. The crimes he committed didn't just consist of rape and murder, but also necrophilia. Earl Nelson had a fairly abnormal early life, and that seemed to show a repetitive pattern of mental health issues and psychosis throughout his later years. So Earl Nelson was born on May 12, 1897 in San Francisco, California, and his birth name was actually Earl Leonard Farrell. The first series of traumatic events in Earl's life took place at just 15 months old when both of his parents died of syphilis. Like I mentioned in the last episode, I work in the medical field, and syphilis is actually a very serious sexually transmitted infection. It can remain dormant in your system for quite some time before it even gets reactivated, and if it's left untreated, it can cause a huge amount of organ damage, which is essentially fatal. And back at the time when Earl's parents had syphilis, there was no treatment for it, and the knowledge that penicillin cured the early stages of syphilis wasn't even discovered until nearly half a century after his parents died from the complications. So after Earl's parents died, he continued to live in the San Francisco area, but was sent to live with his maternal grandparents named Lars and Jenny Nelson. He was raised in a strict Pentecostal home, and from a young age, Earl did not fit into the social norms of this religion. So even though he was raised in this strict home, Earl had the tendency to be a bit more troublesome than the average child. By the age of 7 years old, there were numerous problematic behaviors that he portrayed, and at this age, he was actually kicked out of school, and his teachers often said that he had audible hallucinations, would talk to people that weren't there, and additionally, he would quote portions of the Bible and often refer to a great beast, so this was definitely not something accepted in his Pentecostal upbringing. Another huge red flag was that he would often secretly watch his cousin undress. And once again, in this culture and in most cultures, you're kind of supposed to suppress all sexual desires at the age, especially for your cousin. So this was something that was absolutely not tolerated in his home. Another tragedy that struck Earl Nelson occurred at the age of 10 years old. Earl was riding his bike when he was struck by a passing motor vehicle. This incident left him in a coma for 6 days, and medical staff didn't think he was going to come out of it, but he miraculously survived. After his head injury, Earl suffered from numerous complications. He frequently had headaches, memory impairments, and he was also known to be very agitated and have unpredictable behavior. Now, I'm not sure how many of you know about the research on serial killers having brain injuries as children, but there are numerous serial killers who suffered from head trauma at a really young age. MurderMilesTours.com, which is another true crime podcast that's definitely on my to-listen-to list, but they provide a huge list of serial killers and give a description on the brain injuries they sustained during their childhood. And a few examples I have here are like John Wayne Gacy, who was beaten unconscious with a broomstick by his father, and when he was 11, he was hit in the head by a swing. Henry Lee Lucas, also known as the Highway Stalker, he received numerous head injuries between the ages of 5 and 10, with the worst head injury being at the age of 7, when his mother hit him in the back of the head with a 2x4 woodblock. And the last one I'll talk about is Dennis Rader, also known as the BTK killer. And he was dropped on his head as a baby, which did cause him to stop breathing and turn blue. But his mother didn't bring him into the hospital for medical evaluation. Working in an ER now, this absolutely baffles me that Dennis Rader's mother didn't bring him in, especially after he stopped breathing and turned blue. I mean, people bring their children in for the most ridiculous complaints. Like, seriously, we had a mother bring in a patient because she said her children's fingernails weren't growing since the last time she had cut them, which was like 2 days before. I'm not kidding you guys. This is like a routine thing in the ER. And I'm basically just completely shocked at the different individuals on the complete opposite sides of the parenting spectrum. I mean, I'm anxious to see where I fall in when I have kids, but like right now, observing these two different parenting styles, it's just completely fascinating to me that there can be such opposite parents, and especially fascinating that you're not going to bring your child in after he stops breathing and turns blue. But unfortunately, with this research, there are a lot of confounding factors, like the environments they grow up in, the genetics involved. But it does seem like there could be a significant correlation between serial killers and experiencing a traumatic brain injury or some sort of head trauma as a child. So back to Earl Nelson, he had this bad accident at 10 years old, and then he had erratic behavior post-injury. About 4 years after his head trauma, his grandmother died, so he was then sent to live with his Aunt Lillian and her husband. Even after the move, Earl still had very abnormal behavior. This behavior included just having complete disregard for the law, and Murderpedia also describes him as being a compulsive masturbator. Even though he was a troubled child and participated in numerous heinous acts as a teen, he still clung tight to his religious background and would routinely read the Book of Revelations. Although he was invested in his religion, Earl was known to frequent bars and brothels in his teenage years, and during one of his brothel visits, Nelson actually contracted a sexually transmitted infection. Nelson's life continued to seem like it was on a downward spiral, and he was not headed in a great direction. In his late teens and early 20s is when Nelson began making his first well-known name with law enforcement. And his first well-known crime was breaking into a cabin in Pulmas County, California, which is located in the Sierra Nevada foothills. He actually broke into this cabin assuming it was abandoned, but this did land him a two-year stay in San Quentin, but he was later paroled for this crime in 1916. I'm sure you crime enthusiasts know about San Quentin, but if you don't, it's one of California's maximum security prisons and houses some of the worst criminals. I mean, the worst of the worst. Nowadays, it's home to some infamous murderers like Scott Peterson, and actually the murder of Lacey Peterson, his wife, took place in Modesto, California, which is only about 15 minutes away from my hometown. I remember when it was all happening, and it was horrible for the entire community and pretty much the entire world. But anyway, yeah, so that happened, and Scott's now on death row in San Quentin, so it's a really, really not a good place you want to be. So after his release from San Quentin, Nelson was then arrested a few months later in March of 1917 in Stockton, California, for petty larceny. Stockton, also right by my hometown. It's, like, really weird when these cases are right down the street from where you live, because it's just interesting to see that little piece of history that happened so long ago, but just, it's crazy. But after he was released from his 6 month stay after the petty larceny in Stockton, he was then arrested again in Los Angeles and spent another 5 months incarcerated, but he did manage to escape from this LA County jail somehow. And after his escape, he managed to enlist in the military, which I still don't quite understand. It was difficult to find research on how you escape from prison, but somehow can enlist in the Navy. I did read that he would routinely change his name, so I'm assuming that this is how he managed to enlist in the Navy, being under a different alias, but he managed to make it in. His behavior in the Navy was described as erratic and psychotic, so the Navy psychologist had him admitted into the Napa State Mental Hospital. However, in May of 1918, a psychologist at the mental institution said that he did not seem, quote, violent, homicidal, or destructive, and he was a master of escape, so Nelson actually managed to escape from the psychiatric facility 3 times, and after the third, staff just kind of stopped attempting to find him. This is extremely troubling. I mean, Nelson was noted hearing voices, having both audible and visual hallucinations, and he had occasionally heard voices telling him to harm himself. Just along by being a danger to himself, he should have been searched for. I mean, regardless of the psychosis, if you're a danger to yourself, you should definitely be taken seriously by a mental health facility. But anyway, the facility stopped looking for him, and at this time is when his crime spree significantly elevated. At the age of 21, Earl Nelson began participating in numerous sex crimes. This continued into 1921 when he was arrested after posing to be a plumber and breaking into a house so that he could molest a 12-year-old girl named Mary Summers. And as he attempted to molest her, she panicked and ran and grabbed her brother, who eventually chased him down. But he was arrested for this crime and was finally deemed a danger to society. But at his competency hearing, but instead of being incarcerated, Earl was sent back to the Napa Mental State Hospital, where he had once again escaped. Not once, but twice. This time they did continue searching for him after he escaped, but after being there for about 4 years, Nelson was discharged from the institution in 1925. This is when his crimes went from bad to worse, and in 1926, Earl Nelson began his 18-month murder spree, which involved 2 countries and over 20 women. Now, before I get into the first known murder, Earl Nelson was speculated to have murdered 3 women in 1925, a year earlier in Philadelphia, but there was no substantial amount of evidence linking him to the series of crimes, so he was never charged for it. So, let's begin the murder spree. His first known victim was Clara Newman. Clara Newman was a 60-year-old female landlord in the San Francisco area. From Clara's understanding, there was a man named Roger Wilson who was an interested tenant, so she scheduled a visit with him to show him a room that she had for rent. But on February 20th, 1926, Earl Nelson, who was under that alias of Roger Wilson, strangled Clara Newman to death and then performed necrophilia and raped her dead body. She was later found in the attic of her home. About 2 weeks after Clara's murder, Nelson struck again. He traveled a little less than an hour southeast of San Francisco to San Jose, California, where he met with a 63-year-old woman named Laura Beale. It is once again presumed that he presented himself as a potential tenant, but sometime in the midst of their encounter, he had grabbed a cord, which he used to strangle her to death. It is said that the cord was so tightly wound around her neck that it actually embedded into her neck. The following murder he committed were all fairly similar. He would pose as a tenant, strangle and kill the innocent woman, then rape their lifeless bodies. After murdering Clara Newman and Laura Beale, Nelson strangled another 63-year-old woman named Lillian St. Mary. Once again, exactly 2 weeks later, he murdered 53-year-old Ollie Russell with a cord in her boarding house. The murder of Ollie occurred in Santa Barbara, California, which is about 5 hours south of San Francisco, but due to the similarities between all 4 cases, law enforcement was able to theorize that the cases definitely seemed to be related. At this point, it seemed that Nelson was seeking out female landlords, and truly no one was safe at this time. It's weird to think of a pre-Craigslist world where detectives really had no solid means of tracking who was requesting to rent rooms from these women. As much as Craigslist and technology has its negatives, it also does have its positives when it comes to tracking and evidence, and it really does help in solving crimes. But even though it was presumed that Nelson moved his crimes to the Santa Barbara region, he had actually migrated his way back to the Bay Area of California, and on August 16th of 1926, that same year, Mary Nisbet, who was another woman leasing out an apartment in Oakland, was another victim of Nelson's who died by strangulation. She was later found in the bathroom of her vacant apartment by her husband after being both strangled to death and raped post-mortem. After these murders occurred is when Earl Nelson received the name the Gorilla Man. By this time, they were able to link the same suspect to all 4 cases because he had a very repetitive pattern. He posed as a potential tenant, carried a Bible so that he would appear less threatening, and then right before that, he would proceed to murder and rape the dead bodies of these women. He would then place the bodies in attics, bathrooms, and under the bed before stealing money and jewelry and other valuables from their homes. TheLineup.com states, "The press dubbed Nelson the Gorilla Man due to the viciousness of his murders and the description witnesses gave of him, a dark, stocky man with long arms and long hands." After committing the murders in California, Earl began hitchhiking and continuing his murder spree across state borders. He then traveled to Portland, Oregon, and still in the year of 1926, Nelson raped and murdered another landlord named Beatty, B-E-A-T-E, Withers. Or Beta? Beta, that sounds better. Beta was only 35 years old at the time of her murder, and she was found by her teenage son. She had been stuffed underneath some clothing inside of a steamer trunk in her attic. The very next day, another woman named Virginia Grant was brutally murdered at her vacant home she was leasing out, and her body was later found behind the furnace of the basement. The first Portland victims, Beta, was murdered on October 19th, and Virginia was murdered on October 20th. So on October 21st, another landlord named Mabel Fluke fell victim to Earl Nelson. She was another Portland resident, and initially everyone thought she had disappeared from her home. But a few days later, she was found in the attic of her home, and she was strangled with a scarf. A little less than a month later, Nelson returned back to the San Francisco area on November 18th of 1926. He murdered Anna Edmonds, who was a 56-year-old widow. Initially, law enforcement wasn't quick to say that the dark strangler had returned to the area, but one of Anna's friends actually stopped by the house that day and saw her talking to a man that fit the description of the dark strangler to a T. The very next day, on November 19th, in Burlingame, California, a 28-year-old pregnant mother-to-be was attacked while showing a potential buyer the home that she had for sale. But in a twist of events, this woman actually survived the attack, and she provided detectives with a great description of the man. And the victim describes that she felt she was safe with him because he made, like, detailed comments about the house. For example, he would comment routinely on the ceilings. But later on, she was quoted saying, "I realize now that he was trying to get me to look up towards the ceiling so that he could get behind me and grab my throat." Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible to even have to think of. A few days later after this attack, Nelson continued his murder spree back in Portland, Oregon, where he had murdered and raped Blanche Myers. I always forget what the lady on the Golden Girls name was, if it was Blatch or Blanche, but I think it's Blanche, actually. So, Blanche Myers. This murder occurred right around Thanksgiving of that year, and witnesses said that there was a man living in Blanche's boarding house during the holidays, and his name was Adrian Harris. Adrian Harris had paid for numerous nights at this boarding house in advance, but left abruptly right after the murder. Before he murdered and raped Blanche, he had established a friendship with another boarding house resident and actually gave her a piece of jewelry as a gift. Police later identified this gift as a piece of missing jewelry that was taken from the murder of a wealthy widow who lived in the Seattle area. So, adding another murder victim to the list. After this murder, there was a huge advisory sent out by law enforcement to all women who were renting or selling their homes. This advisory from the Portland Police Bureau stated, "Do not show your houses or room for rents alone. If necessary, call a policeman to accompany you. Crimes such as these should be prevented and could have been prevented if women had been more careful. I do not wish to unduly alarm people of Portland, but there is no denying the situation is grave." Although the police advisory was successful from a preventative crime standpoint in the Portland area, it did not stop Earl Nelson from hitchhiking to different parts of the United States and claiming numerous more lives. On December 23rd of 1926, a 41-year-old resident of Council Bluffs, Iowa, named Almira Berard, was found strangled to death in her home. After investigating her murder, local law enforcement thought her death was a suicide, but she had actually suffered from mental health issues. But after they discovered that she was also raped, suicide was obviously ruled out, and the case was filed as a murder. All these murders had been horrendous, and the next two really just tug at my heartstrings because A, it was right around Christmas time and the New Year holiday, but B, the victims involved were much, much younger. On December 27th, 1926, Bonnie Pace of Kansas City, Missouri, was also raped, and she was raped postmortem, so she had necrophilia performed on her, and she would later be discovered in an upstairs bedroom by her husband. This is one that is just the worst. So the very next day, on December 28th, Germania Harpin was murdered and raped in Kansas City as well, but unfortunately, Nelson also took the life of her 8-month-old son, Robert. I think one of the most chilling details of this crime is that Robert was strangled with his diaper. It's just so sad seeing an innocent life being taken away at such a young age. I mean, Robert was so young that he couldn't have even identified Nelson, so there was literally no point in killing him other than the fact that this monster was pure evil. Both Germania and her son Robert were found later that night when her husband had returned home from work. What an absolute nightmare to walk into. I seriously couldn't imagine the agony that man felt. I mean, now we have technology, so we can kind of get some preconceived notion at times that something's wrong. Like, if our loved one's not answering the phone, or they haven't been on social media, they're not texting us back. I mean, back in the 1920s, there was none of this. So I'm sure he was in complete horror and shock when he returned home that night. But Earl Nelson continued his murder spree. And from Missouri, he migrated to Philadelphia, where he took the life of another female. He then continued to Buffalo, New York, where he rented a room from Jenny Randolph, under the alias of Charles Harrison. Randolph's raped and lifeless body was found 3 days later under her bed. From there, Nelson made his way to Detroit, where he murdered two women who were living in the same boarding house. Their bodies were discovered by the building owner after he went to collect their monthly rent payment, and both women were murdered and raped. His last United States murder occurred in Chicago, Illinois, when he took the life of another young woman. By June 8, 1927, in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, a young 14-year-old girl named Lola Cohen was selling flowers from door to door when she went missing. And 2 days later, in the same town, a young woman named Emily Patterson went missing. Later that evening, Emily Patterson's husband kneeled down by his son's bed to say their nightly prayers when he found the lifeless, strangled, and raped body of his wife. This crime, however, was a little bit different than Earl's other crimes because he had also attacked her with a claw hammer. Winnipeg law enforcement got wind that the gorilla killer and dark strangler had made his way from the United States to Canada, so they decided to do a full-blown sweep of all of the boarding houses in that area. Now, there was a boarding house they found where Earl had recently stayed, and upon further investigation of his room, they discovered the decaying body of the innocent 14-year-old girl, Lola Cowan. Similar to Patterson's murder, Lola's murder wasn't exactly the same as his previous routine crime. Lola had also been brutally mutilated, and he was said to have performed mutilation on her that was in a similar manner to Jack the Ripper. Officers did note that the bed of the boarding house had been slept in, so this man literally slept above the body of a young girl who he had just taken the life of and brutally murdered. It's just horrifying to think that. After the discovery of Lola's body, there was a huge alert out for Nelson in both Canada and the United States. But finally, on June 16th, 1927, constables in Killarney, oh Lord, I don't know if I'm going to be able to say this name, Killarney, I'm going to go with Killarney, which is a border town in Manitoba, Canada, which is about 12 miles away or 20 kilometers away from the North Dakota border, but law enforcement stumbled upon a man who fit the description of Earl Nelson. This man was named Virgil Wilson, and initially he was so calm and cooperative and collected that the police were almost positive that they had the wrong man, but they trusted their gut and their internal judgment and booked Virgil into the local jail. However, being the little Houdini that he was, Nelson managed to escape from this jail cell. I will never really understand how this man escaped so many times. I mean, he escaped from LA jail, this jail, the mental hospital. I mean, he's escaped a lot. I guess it's fitting that he was dubbed Houdini because he really does escape from everything. It's kind of mind-boggling. But anyway, so by the grace of God, amidst Nelson's escape, he attempted to flee the area again by train. However, he decided to get on a train that members of the Winnipeg Police Department were on. So luckily, he was recaptured within 12 hours of his escape. And nobody was harmed in that 12 hours that they know of, at least. Earl Nelson's picture was sent across the United States, and he was identified by numerous witnesses claiming that he was the man they saw before these women were strangled to death and their lifeless bodies were raped. One of the most chilling comments ever to come from Earl Nelson was, "I only do my killings on Saturdays." But as we all know, this is false, since he committed these crimes within 24-hour spans of each other, and it's truly just chilling to hear those words come out of any serial murderer's mouth. He eventually retracted all guilty statements and claimed he was innocent, but there was such a large amount of evidence against him that there was no reasonable doubt that Earl Nelson had been behind all of these murders. 60-plus individuals testified against Nelson, and he eventually was tried and found guilty of his crimes. One jail guard noted something rather chilling, that Nelson would often obsess over a specific passage from the Book of Proverbs, which says, "My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lieth in wait as for prey, and increaseth the transgressors among men." Oh, that is really creepy. I've never seen that in the Book of Proverbs, but somehow he managed to find it. Once he was found guilty, after only 40 minutes of deliberation, the jury sentenced Earl Leonard Nelson to death. On January 13th, 1928, a little after 2 years from the beginning of his murder spree, at the age of 30 years old, Earl Nelson was executed by hanging at 7:30 in the morning in Winnipeg, with his final words being, "I forgive those who have wronged me." And that, my friends, is the crime spree and murder spree of the serial killer Earl Leonard Nelson. I hope you enjoyed this crime. Once again, follow us on any social media. Instagram is FB_crime. Twitter is at FullBodiedCrime. Facebook, like the Facebook page, FullBodiedCrime. Our website, full-bodiedcrime.com, where you can get all the sources for this case. Please go review us and rate us and talk about us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Google Podcasts, we're on there now too. I appreciate you all so much, and I hope you guys have a beautiful and blessed day. And I can't wait to bring you guys the next murder. We will talk to you later. Bye-bye.